Recorded Hello, everyone. Live.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of Talking Twilight Zone. I'm sorry we're late today, but unfortunately we're having some technical problems. We're all here now, though, so I guess we can get started. Before we do start the show, I would like to turn it over to our main moderator, Mr. Bobby Neer.
Okay. Hear Bob talk.
Yes?
Yes. We want you to start the show, Bob. Go ahead.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, would you please start the show?
Okay. Thank you, Lynn, and welcome everyone to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone. As everybody knows, especially diehard fans of the series, the Twilight Zone does not always live up to its potential, so to speak. Despite its reputation, there are perhaps more than a few stories that are hard to accept as we go through the 5 years the series was on the air. We more or less tolerate this as we go along, except for this month, where we will review two all-time classics, beginning today with Mirror Image and culminating in 2 weeks when we review The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. In our poll on this episode, it received mostly classic ratings. Only a few people held back a little and gave it an excellent rating. But nobody loves this story more than Ken, as he made very clear in his review on our board, to the degree that he even wrote an open letter to a long-deceased Rod Serling to congratulate him. So because of this, we have decided to break the tradition today and let Ken lead off with a summary of Mirror Image and then his review. After that, we will go around the table and get everyone's review as always.
But before that, we have another portion. Robert has a clip.
Did you want to start the theme, Lynn?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, this show has really been... Okay, here we go. Okay. I will start it in a second.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Okay, and Bobby has already introduced the show, so I'm going to turn this over to Robert for his clip of Mirror Image.
Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, sure, go ahead, start.
Millicent Barnes, age 25, young woman waiting for a bus on a rainy November night. Not a very imaginative type is Miss Barnes, not given to undue anxiety or fears, or for that matter, even the most temporal flights of fancy. Like most young career women, she has a generic classification as a, quote, girl with a head on her shoulders, end of quote. All of which is mentioned now because in just a moment, the head on Miss Barnes's shoulders will be put to a test. Circumstances will assault her sense of reality and a chain of nightmares will put her sanity on a block. Millicent Barnes, who in 1 minute will wonder if she's going mad.
And to you, Ken.
All right. Thanks, guys. Can everybody hear me okay?
Sure can.
Yep.
All right. Mirror Image, episode 21 in the first season. And it originally aired February 26, 1960. And here we are, the month of February, 2010. So my math, that makes 50 years ago this thing aired. And today we're talking about it on Talk Shoe. Amazing. I've seen every single episode in the Twilight Zone series, over 150, 156, whatever the number is. I have to tell you guys, this is my number one episode. I rated it a classic, and I'll tell you why, and I'll give a brief summary of this episode for everybody listening. But I want to tell you first the reason why I consider this the number one episode is because it had an adverse effect on me as a little boy. The year 1960, I was 6 years old. And I don't know if I saw it on the night it aired, but I did see it that year when it came in repeats. So whenever that was, when I saw it, I was just literally jolted and shaken out of my boots. So let me give you a little brief summary on this. The story opens up with the lightning, the gray sky, there's pouring rain, there's a little thunder in the background, and then the camera pans over into to a attractive young lady. Her name is Millicent Barnes. She's just sitting on the bench in a bus depot. And there's a clock in the background, and it says 2:05 a.m. So this is an interesting way to open up the episode and the story. There's no monsters, there's no ghost, there's no aliens, there's no creeping four-lettered creatures walking around the bus depot. There's just this lady with the thunder and the rain, and she's waiting for her ride to get out of town. And so what does she do? She has her luggage next to her. She gets up, goes over to the bus attendant, and says, "Hey, is the bus coming in?" And this old grumpy man is at the counter. He's really quirky looking, glasses, just a grump. And he says, "You were here before." And she goes, "What? I've never seen you before. I'm asking for my ride." And they go back and forth, and he's telling her, "You were just here 5 minutes ago, and then you were here another 5 minutes ago, and you're asking about the same questions." So Millicent right away says, "What's going on here?" And so she goes back to her bench, sits down, and this is where it gets a little creepy. The luggage, she notices her identical luggage is over by where the bus depot attendant is. Then she pans over and looks around the depot, and then she sees it's missing. So apparently there's two luggages, but then there's one luggage. So right away, things are a little creepy. The girl who plays Millicent Barnes is Vera Miles. Excellent casting by the production crew. She played the part perfectly, and she has that mood, she has that feeling. So right away as the audience, as you're watching, you just identify with her right away. You're with her, whatever she's doing, you just go along with her. She has some kind of a mystery going on. Seems like people have seen her before. So she goes into the bathroom, or the powder room as they call it. She meets another person. And this person says she's seen her before too. She goes, "What? What's going on? I haven't seen you." But the really chilling moment of the episode takes place. You have the clock showing in the background. It's about 2:10 a.m. Millicent opens up the powder room door, and she sees an exact duplicate of herself sitting on the bench. She startled, closes the door, and doesn't know what to do. So now, as the audience, we know, there's two girls in the bus depot, and they look exactly alike. So Millicent, she gathers herself, opens the door, and whoops, the girl's gone. Where'd she go? So as the story unfolds, there's a new character introduced. As Millicent, she gathers herself, sits on the bench, a new character is produced. His name is Paul Grinstead. He's a clean-cut, handsome guy. He just came out of the rain, and he just strikes up a friendly conversation with Millicent. And he sits down and just kind of comforts her. Well, Millicent has no reason to be afraid now, and she's kind of wondering what's going on in the bus depot. She explains a little bit to Paul, but it's time to get on the bus. So the bus comes in. They both go out the door, and Paul looks off to the side, but Millicent, she looks up into the bus, and would you know, her exact duplicate is sitting in the chair on the bus, and they look and Melissa looks at her, and the other duplicate on the bus has this slither in her face. I mean, it is so frightening, really. First time you see it, she looks, her look is just, what's the right word? Conniving, mean, something sinister. That's the word I'm looking for. The sinister look. And then you have a commercial break. So we have the first part of the episode. You come back for the second part. Millicent, actually, when Millicent saw her duplicate, she ran right into the bus station. You know, normal reaction would be to run on the bus and talk to the girl, but Millicent, she is so petrified and confused. She just runs back into the bus depot, lies down. And this is a signature moment of the entire episode right now. Millicent starts to think and reason what is going on, and she explains this parallel universe, parallel world theory to Paul. Paul's listening with hesitation, and Millicent comes up with this idea. Do we have a twin in this world? Do we have a duplicate, a counterpart? And is this counterpart here to replace me? When I first heard that as a little boy, I remember it distinctly, 50 years ago. I said, what? Is this true? Is there a parallel universe? Is there a duplicate? Is there someone out there that wants to replace me on this earth? Yikes. You can imagine the impression I had. So anyway, Paul is listening to this. He's very hesitant. Millicent, you know, is figuring out, what should I do now? Should I? She goes into the bathroom. She wants to meet her counterpart, but nowhere in sight. You know, the bus took off. And Paul, meanwhile, talks to the clerk and says, hey, better get the police in here or whatever, so we could take Millicent away. So as Paul goes and gets Millicent, they go outside. This police car shows up. Now, this is the flaw of the episode, and many people had different theories of why this happened. The police come. They grab Millicent. Don't even say a word. I just watched the episode. They don't say a word. They grab her, throw her into the police car, take her off. So the theory, maybe, I don't know if Rod Serling had a theory here, maybe that was the moment that Millicent was being replaced. So she's gone, and then the duplicate on the bus is going to take her place in society. That's one theory. So anyways, Paul, he goes back into the bus depot, kind of wandering around, and now he's got a piece of luggage. So he puts it down, gets a drink of water, and as he gets up, whoops, his luggage is gone. Now, here's where the musical score is really, really good. Ding, 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 or whatever. Real creepy. All of a sudden, someone runs out the door, and Paul sees this guy running out the door. And he goes, hey! So they run out, and then the final scene of the episode is that Paul has a counterpart and a duplicate and identical twin, too. But this guy's running in the night. And I just watched it, guys. This guy turned his head and looked at Paul, but he did not want to stop and talk to Paul. He wanted to keep going and going. And Paul yells out, stop! Hey! Where are you? And then the scene fades into the dark Twilight Zone night. Parallel universes, insanity, and the episode ends. Well, guys, my review, I'll have to give it a classic rating because I was just enthralled by the whole story. The production was good, the directing, the casting of the characters. Martin Milner played the part of Paul Grinstead. Joe Hamilton played the old clerk. There was a lady in the powder room. There was an old couple in the depot. Not too many characters. But the whole story played out nice. I like the black and white background, the bus depot, the rain, the thunder. So my review, classic for the ages, and I've seen it 5 or 6 times. And you know why I like it so much is because, you know what, I think I may have a duplicate in this world. And I've been searching for the guy for 50 years. I haven't found him. But you know what, guys, I'm going to still search for this guy. if he's out there, my first reaction is, hey, I want to meet you. I want to talk to you. What's life been about? You know, are you my counterpart? And I've got a treat for all you guys listening. My son, Michael Artizon, he's 23 years old. He just came over today, and he just watched the episode with me. So he's going to give a little review, then he'll give it back to me, and then I'll throw it over to Kelly, and she can give her review, and we can talk about this excellent episode. So here's Mike just for a few minutes, okay, guys?
Hi, Mike.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Mike.
How's it going? My personal review on this episode, it must have been around the same time as far as how young I was when I first saw this episode, as far as my dad being as young as he was when he first saw this episode. And just thinking back then, it's a shocker. It's a good one. Just watching it right now before this review again for the, I don't know, 10th time. It was great. I still got those shocking chills that you get down your spine. Still the same feeling. One of the things that gets me the most about this episode is when the main character, she goes up to the bus window trying to get on the bus, and she sees her duplicate, that look on the duplicate, taking over the world of this main character is very, very sinister, very evil. She's got that smile, the smirk. It's great. Still get chills to this day watching that episode. That's about it. Here's my dad again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, I'm going to throw it over to Kelly, and go ahead, Kelly.
Okay, and for those of you who don't know, I used to be Kitty, but now I'm Kelly. It's my real name. Kitty was just a stage name. I decided to get rid of it, so I am Kelly. I enjoyed this episode as well. I would agree with Ken. I think it's definitely a classic. I think the episode delivers on pretty much all points. There's suspense. I do think that it is a little odd that she never wants to go and talk to the person. I mean, I think if it were me and I saw and I looked out of the restroom and I saw a woman sitting in the bus station that looked exactly like me, I think I'd want to walk up to her and probably want to say hi and say, where are you from and what's your name and who are your relatives? You know, do we have some common relatives out there? Because this is a little weird, to say the least. But for the most part, I can also understand why Millicent would be a little freaked out, too. I can easily see the reactions being both ways, that you'd freak out or that you'd want to walk up and talk to the person. I definitely feel sorry for her at the end because, yeah, the police come and they just grab her and take her out of there. I mean, this poor woman doesn't even know what she's being arrested for. You would think that she'd at least be screaming, wait a minute, what am I being charged with? But it's still good. And I always liked the ending of it where Martin Milner's character is chasing his other self down the street and his other self turns around and kind of has a funny smile on his face. It's almost it's not really, when I've seen it, I never really saw it as being much of like a sinister type smile. It looks more like a playful smile. You know, so you kind of wonder what exactly is the motive? Are these doubles, are they actually here to replace the people or are they just here to have some fun? I mean, because clearly, when Martin Milner was chasing his other self down the street and you saw him turn around and smile at him, he really didn't look like he was trying to do anything malicious. It seemed that it was more that he was being precocious with him. So that's really kind of my take on it. So is it Lynn who's supposed to talk next?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Well, I agree with you, Kelly, I'm sorry, I've got to get used to that, Kelly, that the very end scene where you see Martin Milner's character turn around and give him that smile, I agree that it wasn't really a sinister or mean smile. It was like, hey, look what I'm getting away with here or something like that. And the, also, as far as what Ken said, as far as it being an ominous beginning, you know, you hear the thunder roaring, you hear see the lightning crackling, you know, it's just a dark night, and it's perfect for an episode of this nature. So I thought, and Vera Miles, she was great in the role. Martin Milner, he was very good in his role. But also, if I saw someone who looked exactly like me, I would be a little shocked, but also I too would have to go up to the person and say, hey, you're my twin. What do your parents look like, you know? Do you look exactly like me? Do they look exactly like my parents? I mean, it'd just be such a strange thing, but I don't think I'd run. I think I'd want to know more about the person. But overall, I thought I gave it a classic rating. I thought it was an excellent episode. The acting, I just did the whole atmosphere of it, the storyline. I did not like the part, though, at the end where the police just came up and grabbed her and threw her in the car. I mean, they even left her purse behind. So it was, like, so strange to have the cops just come up, no questions asked, just throw her in the car, and that, you wouldn't, in this day and age, I mean, you would end up, you know, suing the police for that. You were supposed to be read your rights. And I know they had the Miranda back then, so that she was not read her rights. But that's, that's my take on it. So, Robert, what do you have to say?
Well, I'm not really putting a damper on this, but I kind of a split person in this situation with the story. I feel that the story, the writing, and the actors are, you know, excellent, above average, but unfortunately, I just feel that this episode is an average for me. Now, maybe because of what I see nowadays compared to how this was made back then. I mean, I understand the episode. I do like the subtleties of when we switch. Maybe thinking that maybe they switch to the parallel, or maybe they're just the partition between our world and the parallel world because of the lightning caused the other selves to go back and forth. I mean, I think the story's great. But I just, if they would have added some more stuff to it, but, you know, I understand being of that era that they were limited by budget and what they could do with this episode. But it did remind me of a movie that came out 9 years later in 1969 called Journey to the Far Side of the Sun, where they explore this situation. Roy Thin plays an astronaut, and they discover another planet on the other side of the sun. And when they decide to check it out, and they go over to the other side of the sun, it's another Earth, but it's a reverse Earth, to where everything is right, left here. Over there, it's left to right. And it did kind of remind me of that movie. And also, it brings about some other stuff, the mirror from a well-known series called Star Trek, and also Sliders, and this story episode sets everything for what we get later on with other movies and other TV series. But, you know, that's just the way I feel about this episode. It was basically an average for me. But, Bobby, have you ever seen your doppelganger? Yeah, I'm still looking for mine.
No, and I hope I do have a duplicate in this world, because if I do, I can blame all the boneheaded things I've done in my life on him. And people will stop criticizing me.
I'd like
so
to
if
welcome,
I have somebody to blame on, that would be great.
I'd like to welcome Ratface. We have Ratface with us.
All righty. I must say that I'm a little surprised. I thought I'd be the only one being critical on this show today. Robert, in the poll, did you actually give it an average rating?
I never did the poll yet. I still got to get to that site yet. So.
Oh, okay. But you probably would just rate it average, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's just because of its time is why.
Everybody gave it a 5, and about three people gave it a 4. I gave it 5, but it's more or less just getting caught up in the crowd. Here's the problems I have with the story, and many of them I'm sure have already been mentioned. First of all, I don't think it's a scary story at all. And the reason is that there's no real threat here. I don't see any threat. There's no real threat from these duplicates. This is not exactly Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where people from another planet were actually making duplicates of people here and then taking over their bodies. It's not like that. So I don't think it's a scary story at all. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting premise. But I don't see the real fear. I didn't feel any real fear in seeing it that way. That's one problem I have with it. The other problem is that I think that Millicent's reaction is way over the top. I mean, honestly. And you know what I really find interesting about it? When we first see her in the story, she looks kind of downtrodden, a little sad and everything. She looks like she's already got a problem, that she's either troubled by something or there's something that's bothering her, even before she gets the understands that there's a woman there that looks like her. So I think that she was already starting from a problem to begin with. Then when she saw this kind of tipped it the rest of the way. Her reaction is ridiculous. Like Kelly said, I mean, where's the curiosity factor? So you're in a bus station or a supermarket or the movies or anywhere, and you see somebody who looks not only, it doesn't even have to be exactly like you. Suppose it was just somewhat like you. I can't imagine that you wouldn't go up to them and say, hi, I hate to bother you, but do you see what I see here? I mean, don't we actually look alike? I don't know of a brother or a sister or anything that I have that I'm already aware of. So I would put my hand out and say, nice to meet you, but just exactly who are you? And that's what I would do. I think before you go crazy and you start wondering what this is all about, how about finding out what it's all about? Because you two may have something to talk about. You'd probably go out and have coffee or a drink together and discuss it. You may actually find that you do have a common background. There are 7 billion people in the world, and it's almost arrogant to believe that you're the only one who looks this way. I mean, somewhere in another country or somewhere, there's got to be somebody who looks pretty damn close to you, and you might be mighty shocked. Now, I'll grant you this. I mean, it wasn't likely that she was going to find her exact duplicate in a lonely bus station in the middle of nowhere. So that's the only thing that's disturbing. Now, the other thing that also bothered me, as has already been mentioned by other people, is that this is of the cops coming and just, first of all, Paul shouldn't have called the cops. I would have called a doctor, a hospital or something, and said that there's a woman here who appears to be out of control. You better send an ambulance or a doctor or somebody. I don't know what's happening here. But to call the police when she hasn't really done anything. Now, it's popular today, and I do this too, to criticize the fact that we go overboard with people who have done something wrong. You got to read them their rights. You got to let them get a lawyer. You got to do this. You got to do that. No matter how obviously guilty they are, and we go, this is ridiculous. It's obvious that he did this. Why don't we just take him downtown and get it over with, like they used to do in the old days? But when you see this on the screen, and you see the cops come and suddenly pick up a woman and throw her in a police car and take her to God only knows where, you got to be happy today, like I am, that we do have rights now, that nobody can come and simply say to you, well, your neighbor said he saw you doing this, so you got to come with us. I mean, who wants to put up with that? I found that more terrifying. I found that far more terrifying than I did the fact that she saw her double. That was nothing compared to having the police come and grab you and throw you in a car. I should only be lucky just to see my double. So those are the problems I have with it. My last point on this is that, in my opinion, it's an unrealized episode. It's got potential, but it doesn't go anywhere because there's not enough time. Now, later in the series, The Twilight Zone, much to my regret, goes to an hour long, which I think has always been a terrible mistake. And one of the highlights for me of The Twilight Zone is that they're short stories. Just like you would read a short story in a book, you don't need more than 30 minutes because you don't waste time with all kinds of background that you don't really need. They went to these hour stories. Now, there are a couple in there that I like, and we'll eventually get to them, but basically I don't like any of them. And this is the kind of story that should have been there because I want to know what happened. Where did the police take her? What happened after Paul saw his devil in the bus driving away? Did he go to try to find him? What did he do then? Turn around and go about his life? Did it bother him afterwards? All these things are issues, and they're not in the story. So it just ends in the middle of nowhere, and I have no idea what happened to anybody.
Well, you know what I always wondered? I always wondered why he didn't go and get they never showed him going to get Millicent out of the police station. They should have shown
That's exactly right. He kind of wrote Millicent off without even wondering what happened to her. I mean,
yeah.
He called the cops, so the least you can do is find out if she's okay.
Yeah, because the same thing happened to him.
Also, this goes back to the fact, my beginning of my discussion here, when I said there's no real fear factor, and that is the fact that I believe that her double is kind of smirking on the bus, and his is actually laughing. So I hear my comment, what's so funny? What's so funny about all of this? I mean, why? What do they find so funny about? Is there an alternate universe just as a joke, just to get on our nerves? What's it all about? So they don't appear to be up to anything sinister, so I don't really know what it's all about. There are a couple of stories that drive you crazy like that. You just don't know what happens at the end. I mean, like two of my favorite episodes, and everybody else is like, Time Enough at Last. You know what happens at the end when he breaks his glasses. The Hitchhiker, you know what happens, that she's really dead. Those are the things you really know. Here's a story that just puts up the premise and it goes, I don't know. It's like Ken said, I mean, is there an alternate universe or isn't there not? You either believe in it or you don't. And if there is, I don't know what the purpose of it is. I say this, if there's an alternate universe, they want to make themselves known because maybe we could all get together and solve some of society's problems because we're not doing much on our own. So if there's another guy out there who can solve my problems, I'd like to meet him immediately. And maybe we can work on it. That's it. That's my take on it. So let me, Kelly, you want to say anything other than that?
No.
Okay. All right. Ken, let's take it back to you for a second. What do you think?
Well, I disagree with you as far as the ending being a letdown. I thought the ending was absolutely outstanding. And let me tell you why. Because I think Rod Serling, when he created this series, didn't want to have happy endings, you know, Alice in Wonderland or something, or, you walk off into the bright light. He didn't want to do that. What did Rod Serling want to do with his series? All right, he wants to take the ordinary situation, disrupt it, and turn it into a unordinary or unorthodox situation. So in this story, what I liked about it most was that the two duplicates, Millicent and the double on the bus, never got to meet each other. And so you ask the question, why are they not meeting? They see each other, but they don't meet. Why? And then the same thing with Paul. Now, you got to admit that the end scene was a shocker. Nobody expected for Paul's duplicate to be in that bus station. I had no idea, how do you end it?
Yeah, but Ken, do you think that Millicent's double actually saw her?
Well, on the bus,
I know Millicent saw
smirking.
The double. Yeah,
she's smirking
at Millicent?
Well, she's smirking, and if you look at the scene closely, the double must have seen Millicent. Because Millicent, if you look at her reaction, it's almost like she's looking right at her in the eyes. So
yeah, I think she did too, because
yeah,
he saw himself.
Maybe.
He
but,
saw his
here,
duplicate.
But as far as ending the episode, I'll have to agree that the police situation was not the way to end it, and Rod Serling blew it there.
Yeah.
He should have had it where Millicent somehow and determined she sees the light, She comes out of her delusion. She knows, oh, this is my counterpart. This is my duplicate. This is the person that is, I caught up with this person. So Millicent somehow should have been pursuing her double, and they should have had a scene where they were almost, meeting, but they don't. They go off into the distance. And then you switch the scene to where Paul realizes he has a duplicate, and then he's chasing after her. So the end scene is Millicent's going one way, and Paul's going the other way, and Rod Serling said, he leaves you with the unsolved mystery, and that's the catch to draw people, an audience.
I have my own alternate ending. How about we see that they took Millicent to the hospital, and while she's in there, laying in bed in the hospital, she gets to see that there are also alternates for the doctors and the nurses.
Maybe. But
I mean, that's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's invasion of the doctors and nurses. They're all over the place. Everybody's got a duplicate, and now it really does look like there's an invasion going on. Well, I don't see the fear factor here. I'm not worried, because the alternate universe seems to be just a joke. They're all laughing. You know, so big deal. Why should I worry about that? I'm in my apartment right now, and if my double walked in here, I'd be shocked, but I wouldn't necessarily be scared.
Yes,
other
but,
than the fact that at least he's doing with a key to my apartment. That might bother me.
But the fear, Bob, would be this.
Yes.
What if you saw your duplicate in the train station? Yeah, your reaction is you're going to go up to the guy. But what if, as the more you got closer to him, the more he kept going away from you, so the fear is that you can't get to the guy. That's what the story's about.
Well, why
Millicent,
do I want to get to him? For what reason?
Look,
why?
Millicent could not get to her double, and Paul could not get to his double.
Well, you know what?
That's the whole story.
Ken, Millicent had a chance to get to her double in the train station. Why didn't she do it then? I'm supposed to feel sorry for Millicent. Now she can't get to her double. She had a chance in the train station, which was sitting right there.
Because
why
she was shocked. She was shocked initially.
She was shocked. Well.
Yes.
All right. Well, don't expect me to cry for her that she can't catch up to her double. He can't catch up with his because, you know, I think there's much ado about nothing. I moved to the West Coast 3 years ago, and I came across the country on a train, and I saw my double everywhere, in Chicago, Washington, Denver, all over the place. So I don't know what the big deal is.
I think if we took Bobby, what he was saying about the doctors, I think it would have been interesting to see the wall between our universe and their universe collapse to where you would see the doubles of the people, you know, of the story itself. I just felt it should have been fleshed out a little bit more. But
I agree.
Like I said, it's 25 minutes. You only have so much you can work with.
Move it to the hour-long season. You'll have a better story. If you move it there, you can. And I just want to say one more thing. And Ken talks about having to have an ending. Or not an ending. I mean, Time Enough at Last and The Hitchhiker are two all-time classics. I think they're way, way better than this. They're not even in the same league with it. Yeah.
But what happened to Henry Bemis?
He
Don't
died.
You want to know?
He obviously died. He couldn't find his glasses anymore. He couldn't find his food.
Eating contaminated food from a nuclear war.
And he couldn't even get back to that because
he's going
to
have like the worst diarrhea in history. He's going to die. You understand that?
He's got maybe two weeks left.
That's about it. He's a goner. All right, and the woman in The Hitchhiker is already dead. That's the ending, okay? That's an ending. Now, all right, look, so you do The Hitchhiker, and we don't really know what it was all about. Who was he? Why is he following her? And the story just fades out. I wouldn't have liked it. I wouldn't have liked it nearly as much as I do now. I needed to know an ending. What's going on, and why is this guy always standing in front of her car? I agree. There are certain episodes in Twilight Zone that are built to be that way, to leave you thinking at the end so that you go, wow, that's thought-provoking. That's fine. I have no problem because nothing on TV today is thought-provoking at all. Okay, today you don't have to use your brain at all. So that's fine. But a little of that goes a long way. In a story like this, show me something. Show me her in the hospital. Show me what Paul did afterwards.
Paul did try to go after his double, and he couldn't catch him. He was running too fast. Did try to approach him.
I understand that, but I don't understand he ran after him. But what happened after that? Did Paul just go about his life and say to his friends, you know what, I had a weird thing happen to me in the train station. I met this woman, she saw a double, then I saw mine. Nothing. All you got is a credit.
Bob, you're missing the entire point of the story.
Oh, I am not. What?
Yes, you are. You're missing the main thing, and the thing is this. They cannot meet their double because the parallel universe will not allow it.
I didn't say they had to meet their doubles. I don't care if they never meet their doubles. Just give me an ending.
You want them to meet.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
You want an ending to the story? You said
that doesn't have to be the ending.
The ending of the story is they cannot meet. That's the ending.
Are you listening to me? I don't care if they don't meet their doubles, okay? I was sitting there right saying that she should be in the hospital, and Kelly said she thought that my ending was pretty good. Then you want a really thought-provoking ending? See, the problem is, by ending it just that way, with her seeing her double on the bus, and him seeing his, I'm thinking that maybe or not he just got caught up in the moment and he thinks he saw his double. Maybe he didn't. But if you take her, if you extend the scene a little bit and see her in the hospital and there's doubles around, maybe the doctor or something like that, then I'm really going to start thinking, is she really crazy or is this for real?
Yeah. I wouldn't have the hospital scene because the whole point of the story is the bus depot. If you switch to the hospital, you're getting into a whole new situation here.
Well, you got time to do it.
You got to stick with the bus depot. That's the creepiness of the whole story.
That's what I was saying. Maybe they should have touched each other at the end, zapped each other, both knocked themselves out, and it could have ended there.
That's a good ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simple, quick.
So
how about Joe Hamilton?
You're perfectly content with the ending the way it is. And I don't want to be too hard here because it's not bad.
No, it's not.
It doesn't ruin it for me. But I just think there's a lot of potential here that isn't there. And although not all Twilight Zone stories are scary, look, I was just 13 years old when this series started. So I wanted to be scared. That's why I watched it. It's like going to a horror movie. I wanted to sit there and go, woo, you know, like in 2 weeks when we do The Monsters Are Doing Maple Street, that story really scared me. It really did. It was people, neighbors turning against each other. I thought,
wow. That was an outstanding episode.
Yeah, that's a different story. There's a lot of fear there. People are shooting at each other and throwing lamps through windows and things. But in this story, it's just so benign. It's like, it's kind of creepy and it's kind of, But when you get right down to it, everybody goes their own way in the alternate. You said it yourself, Ken.
Yeah.
We don't meet the alternate universe. God's in his heaven and all's right with the world, and that's the end of it right there. That's very nice. But it ain't the Twilight Zone.
Well, if it's time, maybe it was, but, you know.
Well, you can make the same argument with any episode in the Twilight Zone as far as ending.
I wouldn't say with every one.
All right, look, you just said monsters are due on Maple Street. When we review that one, Don't you want to know? Don't you want to know further what happens at the end there?
Yeah, but I saw what happened at the end of mine. So let's not talk about that. We got to do a show on it in 2 weeks. So I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into that today. I was perfectly satisfied with the ending of that. But we'll talk about that at length in 2 weeks.
With time enough at last with Henry Bemis, didn't you? You know, he breaks his glasses and he's right there. Don't you want to know what happens next?
He's dying.
You know what's going to happen.
Die.
Yeah, it reveals it.
Henry dies.
What happened?
I don't know if he died right that moment.
Yeah, but even if he... even
he's inhaling radiation. You don't think that's lethal?
And plus, how is he going to find his food again? He can't even see his hand in front of his face. He can't even get back to his food.
Yeah.
So he's going to starve to death.
All he can do is sit there and die. He has no choice now. He's already eaten contaminated food. And that's enough right there just to breathe the air.
And he can't even live, and he can't even find that again, so he'll die from starvation or radiation, one or the other.
That's exactly right. So that's a definite ending, and of course the woman in Hitchhiker is already dead. So those are real endings. But I just think, I agree actually with Robert. I think that, I don't know that I would say it's average. I need a little bit more than average, but I gave it a 5 because everybody else did. It's kind of like mob rule. I got caught up in the mob, so I gave it a 5. I might have been more inclined to give it a 4, even a 3, but... Ken's been whispering in my ear for so long now about how this is the greatest thing he's ever seen that after a while I started to get convinced. So I went ahead and gave it a 5.
Well,
all right, listen, we need to wrap this up. Good discussion and everything. We don't agree totally, and that's what makes for the best shows. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to all of my co-hosts for giving their opinion. Lynn, why don't you get us out of here?
Okay, thanks to everybody for being here. Sorry for the technical difficulties in the beginning. Okay, and that's a wrap.
Press your button.
Okay. Good show.
Okay. Bye.